14 on 1070 WIBC. Donald Davidson. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Let's get to the phones. We got folks hanging on again. 239-1070-1-800-571-WIBC. Let's go to line number one and speak to JB. You're up with Donald Davidson, JB.
Yes, I love your show. I was given an old photograph of a roadster with a, I think it was car number 44, and it, I think I figured out the driver was Johnny Thompson. It was a Schmidt special.
Oh, yeah.
And it was sitting at a dirt track where the picture was taken, but I just wondered if you, I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio.
Well, if you've got a picture of it, of a dirt track, I mean, 1955 would be the year. He did.
Okay.
He did drive that car in the 500.
He did?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He started 33rd and finished 4th. In fact, there's quite a story to that, as there were stories to everything in those days.
Well, I need to hang up now. I'll listen on the radio. Thank you.
Okay, then. Well, if it's a dirt track, that could be Langhorne, or it would be the Indianapolis Fairgrounds.
Springfield?
Well, no, because he was injured. He was injured at Langhorne, so he was out and then came back and finished the year. So it would be Sacramento and Phoenix. Anyway, he drove the car at the 500. That was not the car that he was entered to drive. Peter Schmidt was the owner and entered two cars, and Manny Ayulo, who had been runner-up at the national championship the year before, was also his own chief mechanic. And they had a Kuzma Roadster, and they had the upright dirt car, and he was fatally injured. Ayulo was fatally injured just before the second qualifying day was coming to a close, except it was a practice run. It wasn't a qualifying run. And he went down the straightaway and straight into the wall, head on, and succumbed to the injuries. I think the next day, he may have lingered 2 days, but it was not instant, but it was only a matter of hours. And so the car was badly destroyed, bent into an S, although they did repair it and ran the next year. Cars used to be involved in fatal accidents and be running before very long. But anyway, the dirt car, which was entered, I don't know that they really intended to run it, but Ayulo, who, as I say, was his own chief mechanic and his own engine man, had that car sitting by if needed, or certainly to run the rest of the year. And so they took that car and hired a guy named Harry Stevens, who was a legendary chief mechanic that was on a car that hadn't made it. And so then they hired Johnny Thompson, who had been in another car, McNamara dirt car, and he qualified 33rd and then came up to 4th at the finish. But anyway, the gentleman says he has a photograph. I think Johnny Thompson was back in time for the Hoosier 100, and in 55 they weren't running Syracuse, so I think it's probably the Hoosier 100, and then the other two races would be Sacramento and Phoenix. And I think he was second in all three of those.
Great job. Thanks for the call, JB. Let's continue on. Tom, you're on WIBC with Donald Davidson, sir.
Yes, I was wondering about the national championships of 1952 and 73. How many races did Chuck Stevenson win national champion in 52?
52, yeah.
And also, you mentioned last night that Roger McCluskey had won 4 championship races. Were all 4 of those in his year 73 when he was national champion?
No. He won at Langhorne in 150-miler. Right after Langhorne was paved the second year it was paved in 1966. And then he won a 100-mile race at Springfield in 68, which was on dirt. And then the Ontario 500 in 1972. And then the Milwaukee 200 in 1979.
So he didn't win any races the year he was national champion?
I think that's, well, let's see. I think that, no, he must have had one then. Because there have been people that won it without a victory. And
Tony Bettenhausen in 1958.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Yeah, so anyway, so I shortchanged him. He had more victories than I thought.
And Chuck Stevenson, I mean, gosh, nobody seems to remember him that I can.
Well, yeah, that's unfortunate. Chuck was very, very accomplished.
In 1952,
yes.
Did he win any races that year to become national champion?
I'm hazy on that, but he had to have won at least one because he didn't win it with no victories. I think he had two, and I'm embarrassed to say that I can't recall what they would have been. I can remember what some of the races were and who the winners were, but I need to brush.
He was a distinguished looking man, kind of small, pepper haired.
Yes. Well, that came later. When he won in 52, it wasn't...
I know. I mean, when I knew him in the late 50s and early, knew of him, and when I saw him in the early 60s.
Yeah, he was very distinguished. In fact, he was one of a number of drivers that had an involvement in World War II. And what he used to do was to ferry bombers, which meant that he was not in combat, but they would fly the aircraft to the camps or whatever the term would be from where they were going to take off and go into combat, and then in the meantime he would return home and then fly another one out.
He looked somewhat like Dwayne Carter in later years.
Yes.
His white hair is very distinguished straight back.
Yes, when he returned in 1960, because he was gone for 6 years. In fact, that's kind of a story on itself that. He actually retired from championship racing after Clay Smith, his own chief mechanic, was fatally injured in an accident at DuQuoin, where Roger Ward was actually running wheel-to-wheel with Chuck Stevenson. And there's plenty of irony here. Roger Ward, in the first few years in championship racing... unfortunately, didn't have a very good reputation and was not the favorite driver of some of the others. I mean, he became the dean of the drivers and the old pro, but in his early years, he didn't have the best of reputations. And he was involved in this incident with Chuck Stevenson that resulted in Ward's car spinning around on the main straightaway at DuQuoin and hitting the pits. And... Chuck Stevenson's chief mechanic, Clay Smith, who was legendary at the time, was fatally injured. That didn't do anything for Roger Ward's reputation at all. I mean, it wasn't his fault. It was a racing accident, but everybody really started to get on him about it. And then he also was involved with the Vukovich accident in 55, which was also not his fault. It was a mechanical failure. And so Roger Ward made quite a turnaround in his whole approach. But in the meantime, Chuck Stevenson was so appalled at losing his chief mechanic that he actually got out of racing, although he continued to drive stock cars. And then the irony is that in 1960, and how this came about, I don't know, but in 59, Roger Ward had won the 500 and the national championship for Leader Cards Incorporated, and they decided to go to a second car in 1960 at the Speedway, and they hired Chuck Stevenson, who... A, hadn't driven for 6 years at the Speedway, which was unusual at that time, and then B, how does Roger Ward feel when the fellow that's been bad-mouthing him is now his own teammate? Yeah. So, I don't know, you learn some... You're faced with challenges during your life. And so, anyway, but then Chuck Stevenson came back and actually looked older than he was. He was in his 40s, but he looked more because of the silver hair now. And... he didn't retire until 1968, and the last stat he had was 65, driving for Tassie Battis, Bill Finley.
That's Donald Davidson. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls. Don, Tom, Ken, hang in there. We'll be right back, 623. We'll be right back after this. 628, back with you here on 1070 WIBC, the talk of Gasoline Alley, going on until 7 when the coaches show. Rick Carlisle commences here.
I'm pretty hazy on, I need to start reading the books again. Chuck Stevenson did have two wins. One, I'm sure, was DuQuoin, which occurred to me right after we went off the air. The other one hasn't come to me yet. And then McCluskey had, I think, one victory in 73. I know he had at least one. And I'm thinking maybe it was at Michigan that they had twin 125s.
Yep.
And that was, okay then. If you can look up Chuck Stevenson, fine. But I would only look him up in books, and I don't have any here. And if
Donald never uses books.
I use books, but not here.
Not here. Yeah, I mean you can. Yeah, I mean you.
But anybody can look it up.
Right. Exactly. But that's not what you do. I mean, and you add things that books and websites can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you've been on, since 1966 because faking it. Yeah. Donald Davidson will be back with your phone calls. Hang on to the news, if you will. 6:29, more after this. All right, Joe, thanks a bunch. 6:33. Donald Davidson back here with you on the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Let's get back to the phones.
The other Chuck Stevenson victory in 52, of course, was the Milwaukee 200.
There you go.
Which is 200 miles when it was a dirt track.
Wow.
In fact, I remember there was a magazine article that shows how times have changed. There was an article in Speed Age magazine when he won the championship. It was a profile. And the title page was a full headshot and an upper chest of Chuck Stevenson sitting in a race car with a helmet on. And he had a T-shirt which said Mates White Front on it, which is just show how things have changed.
Was at the White French Lounge on 16th Street?
Yes. Absolutely. They gave him a T-shirt, boy. That's
it's a nice deal.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good...
that's a good deal.
That is a good investment, for crying out loud. Don, you're back on... you're up. Thanks for hanging on. You're up with Donald Davidson.
Donald, hi.
Yes, sir.
Don. Great first name, by the way.
Okay.
Like Joe... in 1963, I was sitting on the banks of the Ohio down Madison watching the Governor's Cup hydroplane race, and Eddie Sachs was driving the fastest boat down there, had a two-engine Allison V12, and it only to lose the oil pressure in the first lap and not do anything to race. And what I was wondering was, are there any other drivers of the Indianapolis 500 that ever drove hydroplanes?
Absolutely. Bill Cantrell was from Louisville, Kentucky, who ended up living in Madison. In 1948 and 49, you'll see in the lineup of Bill Cantrell, who also drove AAA sprint cars, but he was legendary in powerboats.
Okay.
And there's about the Bill Cantrell that there's it's rather ironic that in 48, 49, 50, 51, and 52, there's a Bill Cantrell entered. And then in 53, there's a Billy Cantrell that's entered, and that's a different guy.
Wow.
That's a West Coaster. And it's just irony that but for a year, you would have had two Bill Cantrells entered for the same race.
Wow.
But there was some crossover within powerboat racing. There was a man named Lou Fagel. Who owned a car. In fact, he owned the car that Bill Cantrell drove in 48 and then got bumped in 49. And Lou Fagel was very big into power boats.
Okay.
There you go. Thanks, Don.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Let's continue on. We'll go now to Ken. You're on WIBC with Donald Davidson. Ken?
Hi, Dave, and hi, Donald.
How are you, sir?
I'm a first-time caller, but I've been going to the race since 1954.
Great. Okay.
So I really am interested in the older... statistics.
That's fine with us.
this is in the form of a question, and I looked up what I think is the answer, but it's something that I haven't heard on the air before, is which drivers finished the full 200 laps of the 500-mile race? The way I've got it is there's one driver is all by himself at the top, and then there's three drivers after that that are tied with the same amount. I just wondered if you could come off...
I don't think I understand what you're saying.
Well, which drivers?
Yes.
Completed the full 200 laps, regardless of how they finished.
You mean the most number of times?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Ted Horn did it 8 times.
Right.
Is he it?
Nope.
Is it? Oh, okay.
One of my favorites. I hope you can talk a little about him when we get to that.
Well, hang on. Roger Ward did it 6-7 times.
Right.
Okay. In the early days, you got the situation where the drivers took relief, but Wilbur Shaw would be up there, and he did it in 33, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, and 40. That's 7.
8 he did.
8.
According to what I've come up with.
33, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. I got 7, so I don't know what the 8th one would be.
And I don't have that in front of me. All I've got is
the... I don't think so. I think it's... because on the other occasions, if you're looking at 1927, he took a relief driver. That's the thing where if you, I thought you were talking about where they, if they go the entire distance, relief drivers were very common, but unfortunately not very often credited.
I didn't form my question exactly right.
Okay, then.
I'm saying that the driver who started...
Yes.
And that car finished the full 200 laps.
Well, unless I missed, counted up on my fingers incorrectly, I think Wilbur Shore was seven, but evidently I don't have the person that you're after.
You want to know?
What era are we talking about?
Before and after the war. Mostly before World War II.
Well, you might be talking about Cliff Bergier.
That's...
Well, Bergier frequently took a relief driver. So the number of occasions, okay, the number of times that Cliff Bergier did 200 laps by himself without a relief driver would be 31, 32, 39, 41, and that was it. Because every other year he took a relief driver. Or do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
But including those that where he took a relief driver, I've got a total of 9.
Oh, all right then. But other people were doing the work in 5 of them.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I've got 3 having 8 each, and that would be Foyt, Ted Horn,
yeah,
and Wilbur Shaw.
Okay, then. I didn't get as current as Foyt. It's harder to do after 1964 because they started letting the race only run 5 minutes. Prior to that, the race would run for a fair amount of time after the winner had crossed the line. And so it was possible for more drivers to complete the full 200 laps than it was after 64 and after 74 when they do it as they do now, which is end it with the winner crossing the line. So unless there's a lot of yellows, typically you'd have 3-4 people completing the distance for a while, and then in more recent years there's been more because they pack them up.
There you go, Ken. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it. 641. We'll be back. More to talk of Gasoline Alley after this. 644. Congratulations, Teresa Purvis. Teresa Purvis is going to go to Miami for Game 3 of the playoffs, Pacers versus the Heat, courtesy of our friends at Galleon. The game is on Galleon. Let's head up to Delphi, Indiana, and speak with Jerry here on WIBC with Donald Davidson. Jerry.
Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Donald. Can you profile a driver for me, please, by the name of Bentley Warren?
Oh, yes. Bentley Warren ran in the 500 twice, 1971 and 1975, and he had the same finishing position, 23rd. And he's still driving Silver Crown cars, and he doesn't look any different now than what he did then.
Is he still driving the super modifieds, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he doesn't look any different.
Yeah.
He was from, Worcester, Massachusetts, I think. He has listed Kenny Bunkport, Maine as home. In fact, I think that's maybe where he's from. But he has this very, very, very thick Boston accent.
Right.
And he was a super modified driver that was picked up by Tassie Vattis, a longtime car owner, to come and take his test in 1970. And when it was a very interesting mix of drivers, and he qualified and got bumped, and then came back the next year and made it. And as I say, was 23rd. And he tried his own operation a couple of times, the Bay State Racing Corporation. And then he hooked up with Grant King in 1975, and when the race was stopped at, he had problems along the way, but was running at the point when the race was stopped at 175 laps because of rain, and he was 23rd again. And he came back a couple more times after that, but he continued driving super modifieds, and then Silver Crown cars. He goes to Phoenix and joints like that, and it's just amazing after all this time.
Yeah.
I remember in, put a year on this, about 87, there was a sprint car, combination sprint car and super modified race over at Winchester.
Right.
And it was it seemed like it was the dead of winter. It would have been late October, but it got dark about 4 o'clock, and it was freezing. And he had this super modified with all kinds of downforce. And every time he would go into the first turn, there'd be this shower of sparks would come out from underneath the car. And right. as it was turning dark, boy, that was spectacular. But a very, very nice man. He used to show up at the driver's meeting in a suit and tie when a lot of the others would just wear racing jackets and casual.
Jerry, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. And again, folks can call 1-800-603-MIKE, M-I-K-E, after 7 tonight to ask Donald a question on the Network Indiana show. Chuck, you're back up here with Donald Davidson.
Hey, good evening, guys. How's it going?
Fine.
Donald, I have a question.
Okay.
What driver driver has the most laps during the month of May at the track?
You mean in practice?
In practice, yeah.
Oh, I would have no idea.
No idea.
The most in competition is A.J. Foyt.
Okay. I knew it was A.J. Foyt.
But in practice, I would have no idea. In fact, they've only been recording that information in fairly recent years.
Any way a guy could get that information somewhere?
They never kept track of practice laps
fairly recent years.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks anyway.
All right, man, thanks. All right, and right now here, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 6:48. Let's head up to the WIBC News Center, and we'll check in with 6:53, back with you here on 1070 WIBC, the Talk of Gasoline LA. Donald's show on Network Indiana. Again, if you'd like to ask him a question after 7, it's 1-800-603-6453. That's 1-800-603-MIKE, M-I-K-E. Coach's show with Rick Carlisle coming up at 7 o'clock. 6:53, and let's get back to the phones. And Bill, out in Speedway, you're up with Donald Davidson.
Yeah, Donald, I've got some friends coming from Massachusetts for their first race, so I want to fix them up a T-shirt with some rookie stripes on the back.
Uh-huh.
When was the first year that they used the rookie stripes, and are they still using them?
1950 was the first year, and I don't think they've used them in years. They still had them after the rear wings came in, and they would take them to the underside of the wing, but that hasn't been for quite a few years.
Okay. Well,
I couldn't tell you the last time, but I it's probably been, golly, I'll bet it's close to 20 years since they had where the driver would be approved and then ceremoniously
pull them off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But 1950 was the first year, and they used to they put them across the tail horizontally. So that a veteran driver coming up behind them could be aware of the fact that a rookie was taking his test. Because you could take tests in those days right up till the last minute.
Right.
You'd have guys would pass their test and then go to the qualifying line.
Yeah.
But that's been a while since that happened.
Bill, thanks for your call. And I can tell you, though, that last year, John Royer put rookie stripes on my headset when I was first year on the radio network. So that tradition continues there. Donald, thank you very much. Great job as always.
See you tomorrow.
Yes, sirree. We'll be back at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Donald's show again on...